I am Plant on the Line in Vancouver at thecommentary.ca. My good friend Michael Kwan is back with a new book. I finished it recently, and it's a great read, and I'm not saying that because he's my friend and he's sitting in front of me, but it's an engaging book. It's called Beyond the Margins, an Indispensable Guide for First-Time Freelance Writers, Designers, and Other Work-From-Home Professionals. You might know Mr. Kwan from his blog, Beyond the Rhetoric, which you can find on his website at michaelkwan.com. In this book, as the subtitle says, he offers a guide on how to get into the freelance business, whether you're a writer or not. I suspect if you're in any other endeavor, say you want to be your own boss, you'll find a great deal in this book that's useful and helpful. Michael has had success at the freelance writing business. He shares his experiences, as well as offers advice on how to avoid the pitfalls that the freelance business might be known for, stuff that turns people off from it. In the beginning, Michael Kwan has been writing online since 1999, and his work has been published on websites such as Mobile Magazine, Megatech News, Love to Know, and sundry other sites. Do buy this book. You can do so at michaelkwan.com or amazon.com. Please welcome back to the Plant Online program in studio this time, Michael Kwan. Mr. Kwan, good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks for joining us.
For sure.
I've known you 19 years.
Has it been that long?
I had to write it down because I'd forget if 90, I didn't. Yeah.
1995.
Yeah. We were at Tupper, not about 3-4 blocks from here.
Yeah.
Back in those days, I guess you didn't think in high school that this is the sort of work that you do.
Well, it didn't. It wasn't the kind of job that seemed possible at the time.
Yeah.
We were still in the very early stages of the internet and that kind of thing. So if you wanted to be a journalist, if you wanted to write for a living, the only viable career path would have been through a newspaper or a magazine or something like that. And getting your big break in those kinds of publications is arguably just as difficult as if you want to be a musician or an actor or anything like that. So while it was an ambition that I may have had at that point, it didn't seem like something that was reasonable at the time. I thought I was going to be an architect. And then later on, I thought I was going to be an accountant. And then it wasn't until towards the end of high school, beginning of university, that the internet kind of became what it is. And I started to realize that it was possible for people to not only make money on the internet, but, you know, be your own boss on the internet. And that's a very different thing than writing for someone else under more conventional circumstances.
And I knew you as a pretty good writer. Did you want to do something? I mean, I'm sure you didn't think it was possible, but I mean, is that something in the back of your mind that you wanted to write, say, for a living?
It was something that developed during high school,
yeah.
I guess, because I wouldn't say that I was a book nerd, because I really wasn't, but
yeah.
But like I really enjoyed the power of the written word and what you're able to accomplish by just some ink on a piece of paper, right? And again, this isn't just because you're my friend or anything. But it is because that you started the commentary as the email newsletter thing, and I wrote a few things for you. And then I started my own email newsletter and stuff. So I did that. It started out as a hobby because I enjoyed writing just for fun. There's no money to be made there or anything like that. And I was more than happy just to have real people read what I was writing. So it was something that I enjoyed doing as a hobby, but it wasn't something that I really considered as a career, as a possible career, until partway through university, halfway through university, when I realized after the first couple years that I didn't want to be an accountant, and I didn't want to go for more school to be an architect or pursue psychology or something like that.
And then was that when you realized that you didn't want to, say, work for someone else?
In a sense, because while I was at UBC, I was part of the arts co-op program. So that gave me an opportunity to get some real work experience in the real world. And I ended up getting placed at a few different places. And what I found is the positions where I had more autonomy, more independence, more of a flexible schedule, more control over what I wanted to do, is where I derived more enjoyment, where I derived more... It made me feel better about what I was doing. Rather than me doing it for someone else, I'm doing it the way I want to do it for me. Like that was a great sense of pride and accomplishment that I had when, for example, I worked with United Way doing their fundraising. We were never really given a schedule. It's just like, here are the campaigns that we want you to manage. here are the contacts that you should get in touch with. Help them organize their campaigns and raise as much money as you can. Aside from that, you know, we were given some advice and so on, but not any real direction in terms of how we wanted to go about doing it. So having that sense of control where I was able to go out and explore and kind of figure things out for my own and do it on my own, it gave me a great sense of value.
So you write in the book that it was 2006 when you really got down to it and sort of established yourself as a business, right?
Correct.
I'm trying to remember now because I was around. Was that a lot of sort of soul searching or risk assessment on your part?
I think that I came from a very fortunate position in that after I graduated from university in 2005. I graduated with no student debt. I had no debt. I had a little bit of savings, but I had no debt. And I was still living at home with my parents. So in terms of expenses, it would be, you know, my cell phone or going out to watch a movie and things like that. I didn't have any real expenses. So the ability to take that quantum leap where I could try freelancing, say for 6 months or a year, and if I happened to fail, I'm not out of house and home. I'm not completely broke. I can always go back and try to look for conventional work if I needed to. So coming from that position where, yes, there was absolutely risk, but it's not the same kind of risk that another person may need to take if they already have a mortgage to pay or they already have a family to support. So for me, it was an easier transition than it might be for someone later on in life or someone who already has debt. I got there.
Yeah, and so that's the how the book opens, is deciding whether this is for you or not, and making sure that you're able to do it.
Yeah.
To try it out to see if it works or to sustain it even.
Yeah, so then for someone who might be doing this later on in their career, my suggestion or my advice is that you should have enough of a nest egg or savings so that should this not pan out for you for whatever reason, that you're still able to pay the bills for those however long you want to run this experiment, right? If you don't have that money on hand, you're gonna be end up stressing up so much on paying the bills that your mind won't really be focused on what you need to do to build your business, right?
And then there are those sorts of considerations that you have to make in terms of finances and the sort, but also personal ones, social ones. It can be a lonely sort of existence, right?
Yeah, it completely boils down to the kind of personality or the kind of work style that you prefer. If you're the kind of person who is used to working in an office with a lot of people, there's a lot of kind of white noise in the background with people chatting and phones ringing, you love water cooler banter, you like going out to lunch with your colleagues, working from home as a freelancer may not be an appropriate choice for you, because you know I spend 8, 10, 16 hours a day in front of a computer in my home office by myself. Yeah, there's social media, there's Facebook and Twitter, and you know I go out for lunch with friends from time to time to kind of keep that up, but by and large you are by yourself. That being said, there are options to be a freelance writer where you're not working from home. A good friend of mine, Mina, and some of her associates, they run a few offices out called the Network Hub. And there's one in downtown Vancouver, one in New West, and they recently opened one in Whistler as well. And it's a co-working space. So the idea there is you rent a desk, either by the hour or you pay monthly to have your own desk, and you still your own business, but you get to use their mailing address, and you're around other like individuals. A lot of them are internet startups and things like that where they want to have more of a conventional office space without having to rent an office of their own. So the option is there.
And then you see people at coffee shops. Usually that could be you too, right?
It could be. Yeah. It could be. But then like I wouldn't recommend the coffee shop being your primary workspace. One, you're just going to be spending money for coffee every day for no real reason. And especially if you're going to be spending 8 or 10 hours, you should be patronizing these places. So, and it's not the best of work environments aside from if you're like me and you work from home most of the time, sometimes it's good just to have a change of pace, a change of environment.
And so you do that. You go to the local coffee shop.
I do that from time to time. Yeah. Maybe like every couple of weeks, just to change things up.
The other thing I found interesting in the book was the idea of creating one's workspace. I mean, we have the idea if you're a freelancer and you're working from home, yeah, you can go to the coffee shop or the local fast food place and sit there for several hours, or do it, say, from bed, or at the kitchen table in the living room, sort of lounging about. But what I found interesting is that you did do that for some time, and then you realized that it wasn't ideal, that it wasn't working, per se.
No, well, because then, like, it from the outside looking in, it seems like such a bright idea. Like, it seems so ideal that you can have a zero-foot commute. For a while there...
No dress code either.
There was still no dress code.
Yeah.
Pants optional, right?
Yeah.
But for a while there, I actually had my laptop on like a swiveling chair next to my bed. So when I woke up in the morning, I could literally just roll over the other way and open up the laptop and work without actually leaving my bed at all. And for a while, I thought this was great.
Yeah.
I didn't have to get up to brush my teeth yet or anything. I could get some work done before I wanted to get on with my day. But what I found is that it just doesn't work. You're not in the right mindset. You're not being productive. And you don't have the right kind of separation between what is work and what is home. And so I tried moving my laptop to like the kitchen table or things like that to have more... It wasn't really a dedicated workspace, but at least I was outside of my bedroom. Like I stopped wanting to associate my bedroom with what I'm doing for work. So I was working off the kitchen table or in the living room for a while, and I thought that was great because I could watch TV while I was working.
Yeah.
But the problem is I could watch TV while I was working. So now I have a spare bedroom in my house that I use as a home office. And from my mindset, if I'm in that room, I'm working.
Yeah.
As soon as I step away from that room, I have to leave work behind. Because as a freelancer, which is very different than working a more conventional office job, is that you are always on the clock. You will always feel like you are on the clock. And any spare moment that you think you have, oh, I could be doing this, or I could be doing that. And there's this endless sense of guilt that's boiling in the pit of your stomach. That's like, oh, I shouldn't be watching this TV show because I really should be working on this project for this client. And you really need that kind of separation, not only for your own sanity, but for your own productivity. So when you are at work, you are fully dedicated to it. And when you are with family, you're not worrying about work.
Right? Yeah, and so you're able now, I'm assuming, to have the sort of the work-life balance.
I try. It is an ongoing challenge, and it's something that will never completely go away.
But that's something that you have to think about, though, that you can't...
That is something you have to consciously think about. Like,
you have to sort of plan your day, almost.
There are some freelancers and small business owners and things like that that will tell you the best way to do it is to still schedule your day. Like, completely schedule your day. I am in the office from 8 a.m. to 4 p.m. or whatever.
Yeah.
That's not how I operate at the moment, but it is something that works for other people.
Yeah.
So while I don't schedule my day, I do give myself like a to-do list or a task list that I aim to accomplish that day. And if I'm finished what I want to finish that day, then that's it, right?
Yeah, you're not leaving Suzanne to be the sort of a freelance widow, right?
She's still around.
Yeah. So you do have to make time for your wife, for your family.
Absolutely.
And for, you know, as you said, going to lunch, going to the movie, and this sort of thing, right?
Well, that's the thing, right? You have to work to live, not live to work. And I think that's something that a lot of people have said before, that, you know, the reason why most of us have a job, have a career in the first place, is so that we can get some fulfillment, but more than anything else, you know, money runs this world. You need to pay the mortgage, you need to pay the bills, you need to have that money. But then why are you earning that money in the first place? It's so that you can enjoy that time with your family and with your friends and with your loved ones, so that you are getting out of life what you want to get.
And you do have to be resourceful. I mean, you can't go into this, whether you're a freelance writer or any sort of freelance person, being your own boss, being disorganized. You know, you do have to make plans. You do have to, you know, adhere to... I mean, it can, you know, you can carve out your free time as much as you want, but, you know, at the end of the day, there's still a job to do.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Because then, like, because you're not working in more of a conventional office, you're not going to have a supervisor or a boss hovering over your shoulder, or even just the passive sense of having coworkers around you. And it's like, oh, I should probably look busy, mm-hmm. even if I'm not busy. When you're by yourself, there's no one there to hold you accountable except for yourself. So organization is definitely a big part of it. Discipline is arguably even bigger. You have to convince yourself that if something needs to be done, you should do it. You know, you can't perpetually procrastinate. It's like, well, I'll just do that tomorrow. I'll just do that tomorrow.
And you have to wear different hats.
Absolutely. Yeah. That's actually one of the bigger challenges, and it's something that you learn along the way more than anything else. When you're working in more of a regular kind of office, especially with larger companies, people get compartmentalized. Oh, this person's in accounting, this mm-hmm. person's in human resources, this person's in marketing or whatever. When you're freelance, when you're a company of one, you have to do all of those. And like, speaking for myself, I'm comfortable with the writing. I got into accounting a little bit during high school and stuff, so mm-hmm. I'm not uncomfortable when it comes to dealing with spreadsheets and numbers and things like that. But can you handle being a salesperson? Mm-hmm. Can you deal with the tech support or IT support when your computer goes down? Because you're not going to have some tech guy come to check on your computer for you, because that's you. So there are so many different roles and so many different responsibilities, because there is no one else there to pick up those pieces for you. You can have your friends and you can have your colleagues, but they're not your employees, right? Mm-hmm.
How did you deal with the sort of salesperson part of it? Because you do have to market yourself. You do have to brand yourself. Yeah. You do have to get out there and get jobs, otherwise you wouldn't be a freelance writer.
Yeah.
There's also a lot of rejection in that, I'm assuming.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah.
For me, sales is something that I almost wanted to get away from.
Yeah.
It was part of one of, as I was saying earlier, when I did the co-op program at UBC, I worked for one company where sales was the number one focus. How can we upsell the customer on XYZ? And I wouldn't say that I'm necessarily uncomfortable with sales, but it's not something that I enjoy doing. So for my part, it's not so much about the direct sales as much as it is about brand building and marketing and networking, so that I am connected with the right kind of people who can then help me find clients or attract the right kinds of clients for me through word of mouth or word of mouse, as the case mm-hmm. may be.
I don't like talking about money because I find it vulgar, but I'm sure people listening to us will wonder. Yeah. If this existence of yours is viable enough that you can eke out an existence. I'm assuming.
I've done it this long, so.
Yeah, I'm assuming that it's okay or that it's pretty good. Is it closer to pretty good?
There's a lot of ebb and flow.
Yeah.
And that's something that you'll have to deal with if you want to be a freelancer. That there are strategies and there are ways to try to hedge your bets in terms of the feast and famine cycle. But there are going to be times where you're going to feel overwhelmed by work because you've taken on too many projects. And then a couple months later, you'll realize that you have next to nothing to work on. And as a result, next to no money coming in. So it is something that you have to constantly work on to be able to maintain a reasonable amount of income that you can live comfortably on. I've had up years and I've had down years. Mm-hmm. But it's something that you have to look on for the long run, that on average are you able to, you know, make a reasonably comfortable living. I'm by no means rich, but I'm able to pay my bills. We own our own home, mm-hmm. right? So
yeah. And if you were working, say, you're probably making more than if you're working a retail job or something like that, right?
Yeah.
You're making more than minimum wage, I guess, is okay. Because I'm sure people will say, well, why don't you ask him how much money he makes? But I find that distasteful. So.
And I'd be a sample size of one.
Yeah.
It wouldn't be representative of what a person can make as a freelancer. There are people that, you know, work at home moms or what have you, that are only pursuing it part-time. So they're necessarily only making a part-time kind of income, but they're able to supplement what their family is making. But at the complete opposite end of the spectrum, there are freelancers who are making six figures or more comfortably for doing what they love to do. So it varies wildly. It would be the same thing as if, and there's an analogy that I've used on my blog a few times when this question comes up. If someone were to ask you, how much does it cost to buy a car? Well, it depends. You could buy the used beater car for $1,000, or you can buy a Ferrari for $200,000. They're both cars. They both will get you from point A to point B. And as a freelancer, you could be struggling to make ends meet. You could be struggling to make the equivalent of minimum wage for hours worked, especially with the kind of hours that you work as a freelancer. But at the opposite spectrum, the upside is infinite. Right? You could theoretically make as much as you want. You just have to figure out how to get there.
So one of the things that the internet does is that you're able to work from home, and you can work, say, I mean, there are freelancers throughout North America. What's this place like, Vancouver, compared to, say, other places? I mean, is this a good place to work? I know people say it's expensive to live in.
It is expensive to live in, but...
In terms of opportunities as well as, say, the amount of money that one would make in this sort of field?
There's probably more opportunities to take a more... I wouldn't really say that either. There are more opportunities just being in a major city, Vancouver, Toronto, LA, New York, just because of the congregation of people, just because there are more and larger companies that call these cities home. But at the same time, you also have greater opportunities as a freelancer because there are more startups, especially in Vancouver, San Francisco, places like that, where there are a lot of startups, smaller companies that need help with writing, in my case, or photography or graphic design or what have you. And it is easier to network in person than it is over the internet. Some of my best contacts have been made in person in Vancouver. That's not to say that I don't have great relationships with my clients that live in other parts of the world, but making that face-to-face connection goes a long way.
It adds something to that.
Yeah. Because then people will feel more comfortable working with you because now they met you in real life.
And that's the other thing about you is that you're not just a writer. You do some of the photography. You do some of the editing, programming, and that sort of stuff. You do have to wear those sorts of hats as well, different hats.
It's something that I've continued to learn over time, not only as an added value to the clients, but even for my own sake, that, for example, when I do a product review, I'm not just writing up the review of this new cell phone or tablet. I'm taking the pictures of it so that when I am doing the review, there are images that are not taken from the press package. And by the same accord, learning what little I know about HTML and PHP and CSS and all this kind of stuff so that I am able to reasonably update and maintain my own website without having to outsource that to someone else. There is value to outsourcing that so that you don't deal with that, but I'm naturally curious about things like this, and I enjoy learning. So.
And learning never stops.
It never stops.
Yeah.
Well, especially in this day and age with the internet and technology and stuff, what you could have been an absolute expert in web development 5 years ago, and what you learned 5 years ago may not even be relevant now.
Yeah. The other thing about this book, what I liked about this book, is that it why it's useful for not only people who are aspiring to be writers, it's for people who, because when one reads the book, an attitude sort of comes across, and it's an attitude of being resourceful, being organized and the sort. In terms of, say, setting goals, people may not want to set goals because they think it's you're dreaming, you're wasting time dreaming and the sort. But you do have to have that sort of. You do have to have that. It's not unrealistic to set goals, right? In your case, especially because I mean, you do have to think, as you said already in this interview, you have to think about the long run. And I'm wondering how did you learn that? I mean, did you know that all along?
I think that the best way to think about it is if you want to be a freelance writer, wedding photographer, realtor, whatever. You have to treat it as a business first. It's not a hobby. It's not something I'm doing for fun. And if I happen to earn some money, that's great. right? It's a business. What that means is that you need to approach it the same way you would if you were to open a brick and mortar business. If you wanted to open up your own restaurant, or you wanted to open up your own clothing store or whatever, if you were to go to the bank and say that I need a loan for whatever to be able to open up this clothing store, they're going to want to see some kind of business plan. They're going to want to see how much it's going to cost you to run this business, how much are you projected to make in your first year, and so on and so forth. The startup costs of being a freelancer are understandably less than that, but you have to approach it the same kind of way. You have to think about what is realistic and what you think you can make as a freelancer in your first year, in your first 5 years, in your first 10 years.
There's some stuff in the book too, dealing with, say, questions from people as to the legitimacy of your job. I mean, you just said that you have to think of it as a business. Some people may not look at what you do as necessarily a job, say, as a lawyer or a butcher or something like that. Mm-hmm. Did you still deal with that sort of questioning as to discounting of what you do for a living?
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah,
for sure. Like, I remember even my dad in the first three years. He didn't necessarily object to me working from home as a freelance writer and so on, but he saw it as a temporary stop point until I got back on my feet.
Yeah.
He viewed it as, it's great that you can do this until you get a real job.
Mm-hmm.
He's more accepting of it now that he sees that I've done it for 7 years and, you know, I'm able to pay the bills and whatever. But it is something that I continue to struggle with.
Yeah, how do you deal with, say, the criticism?
More and more I let it slide.
Yeah.
The people that understand what I do and understand the kind of value that I bring to my clients are the only people that really matter.
Yeah.
I can't remember who said that, but those who matter don't mind, and those who mind don't matter.
Hmm.
And I think that's really what it comes down to, because then there's a lot of people like, it's great that you don't have any commute, it's great that you're on a constant vacation. And I used to take really strong objection to that because, you know, I am, arguably I'm putting in more hours than the person that's working a 9-to-5 office job, because I am always on the clock, right? So it used to matter to me more, but now the only people that should matter are the ones that do, right?
So 19 years ago, the sort of career that you've fashioned for yourself didn't exist. Do you think it's sustainable enough, say, for the future? 5 years, 10 years down the road, 19 years down the road?
I think that with the way that the internet is going, with the way that it's growing, it's become both easier and more difficult to make money on the internet. Partly because there are more people that are doing what I'm doing, writing for websites and things online. So there's a greater competition. But there is also greater opportunity because there are more websites. There are more people that read their news online rather than through a conventional newspaper or magazine or radio or TV. So it's if nothing else, working as a freelancer, working for myself all these years, if nothing else, they've taught me a great range of soft skills that could be applied to wherever this world goes in 19 years. If nothing else, it's taught me to adapt to the situation.
Who did you write this book for? And I ask that question because, I mean, it seems like a silly question, but there's a point to this. I'm sure people come to you and ask you what you do, have questions about what you do, and then there you go, you just give them the book or sell them the book, and then they'll find out what you do. But it also gives them sort of the aspiring people the advice that they need. Is there something in this book that you know now that you wish you knew 5 years ago, 10 years ago?
Something that I wish I knew?
Yeah.
Just how difficult it is to separate regular life from work. Something that's really come up is people don't realize that your dream job, whatever your dream job may be, is still a job. It's still work. Yeah, I have my fun, right? Just like anybody else. But work is still work. And it seems like such a simple idea, and people are like, you still have to work. But until you've done it for a while, you don't realize, you know, how difficult, how challenging it can be.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate coming in to do this. Congratulations on this book. I read it with great interest.
Thank you.
And I quite enjoyed it. So continued good luck with it.
Thank you. It's good to finally do an interview in person.
Yeah. The MichaelKwan.com is the website. The book is called Beyond the Margins, an Indispensable Guide for First-Time Freelance Writers, Designers, and Other Work-From-Home Professionals. It's author Michael Kwan. Join me in studio here in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Planta.